Greetings. Welcome to Confessing the Blues. I'm your host, Jim Ange Anderson. Welcome to part two of our interview with legendary drummer, singer, and bandleader, Merle Perkins. Can I give the drummer some?
Well, I put my band together in 1990 called Merle Perkins and the Percolators. And I had that band for about 7 years. I had Pistol Pete in the band. And I liked it when I first got into it, to have my own band, and I traveled all over Canada, everywhere. But as being a band leader, man, is not easy.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. And everything is on you. You know, if somebody don't show up at a gig, you got to try to get somebody, and the club owner's not looking at the resume. He's looking at you.
Right.
Your name is out there. So the last gig that I did, I said, man, I'm going to get out of this business here, go back to being a side man,
right,
because I ain't got to worry about nobody but myself. So the last gig that I had to do was at the Slice of Chicago, and I had this guitar player that was going to play the gig, and then he called me and said, man, I got a gig with my band. I said, man, this is the last gig I'm doing. So I was able to get George Bates. You remember him?
I remember George, yeah.
Yeah, he passed away.
Sure.
And I finished my last gig, and I left the business clean. I didn't stand nobody up. I got out of the business. That was the last gig I did at the Slice Chicago. And I said, man, I'm done.
So going back to being a sideman, you've obviously been very successful before your own group and after your own group. I mean, what do you attribute your success to? I mean, I know myself working with you, you're a complete professional, being on time and all that stuff. But what do you contribute your success to?
Well, you know, like from the years that I've been playing, you know, we all got to leave here sometimes. What I would like to do, which I said in my Jefferson magazine, which one of the older Scandinavian magazines, that I like to give back to the young and older drummers my style of playing and answers telling people about the blues. And I made a living in playing the blues for a long time, you know, 50 plus years I've been playing. I was able, fortunate to make a living of it, you know, and not work a job. So I like to give back to the young and old drummers that want to learn. I get to do clinics, workshops, if it's while I'm still alive, you know. But, you know, sometimes you notice that sometimes people get talked about after they die. I'm still alive. I don't want to be talked about when I'm dead because I'm not going to know that.
Right.
So talk about me while I'm alive.
Well, that's what we're here for, too, you know. You know, because I think there's so much about you that people don't know. I mean, just having this conversation, I played with this guy, I played with that guy, I've toured here, I've toured there. You know, I mean, it's very impressive.
Right.
All the people you work with and continue to work with.
Right. And it's a lot of people don't know some of the people I play with. I don't know if you remember a club on Lincoln Avenue. It used to be called Rat's Holes.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That was way back in the day. They used to have like fusion jazz there. I don't even know how I got hooked up the gig, but I got hooked up the gig with Memphis Slim. And Willie Mayborn was on that show.
Yeah.
So I got a chance to play behind both of those guys. And I can't even remember, that so long ago, who turned me on to that gig. So, I mean, I didn't play behind, you know, like the late Chick Willis, Stoop Down Baby, Larry Davis.
Mm-hmm.
That's another guy I played with. All those guys are gone.
We mentioned some work that we did together with Bither Smith. We went to Canada,
we went down south,
you know, and you know, it's just some guys that are under the radar. They're not the Freddie King.
And playing with the King Snakes.
Playing with the Kings. And I was trying to think, that was the 90s, I think, when we were doing that.
In the 90s when I played in your band, back in the 90s.
And I must tell you that, for me, that experience, playing with you taught me this particular kind of funk. It added a funk to my style that I didn't have. And I still have it to this day. So thank you, Merle.
Yeah, well, are you very welcome. Well, I heard your CD, that R&B CD, and that stuff was funky on that, man.
Well,
so, well, thanks.
Thanks to Merle.
Yeah.
You know,
And I tell you what influenced me to get influenced me a lot. Michael Coleman was a great guitar player, man. That cat had his own style. If you heard him, you could tell his playing. He played different from anybody. He was a funk master, blues master. I learned a lot of stuff from him, man, because he kept the pot going. Yeah. You had to kick behind him. He liked that straight four on the foot. That's what he his drive off of that. And I recorded a CD called Do Your Thing on Del Mar Records. And it's like a song on there called Breakfast in Bed. It's kind of like Tower Power.
It's funny you mentioned Michael, because I think I knew him from you, and he showed me there was a riff that he did that I used to see Johnny Dollar do, and I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, what is that? What is that? And Michael did it. I go, Michael, what is it? And he stopped and showed me that riff, and I use it almost every night.
And,
you know?
And, you know, that's another guy I play with. I used to go, when I first started playing drums, Johnny Dollar stayed on 55th Street. I used to go over to his house and just guitar and drums. I learned a lot from him.
Yeah.
I learned a lot from Buddy Scott, the late Buddy Scott. Yeah. Showed me how to play a shuffle. Then Johnny Dollar helped me out with just guitar and drums, me and him. And then another thing that I used to do at the Cubs game, we used to do the bleachers. It was horns and drums. And we used to go out there.
Just playing out in the street after the
right,
game.
Play yeah. on the streets by the bleachers and make money doing that. I did that for about a year. I can't do that the rest of my life. But also we did the Bears game. And one time in the wintertime, then we used to play downtown and make good money doing that. And one time we played the Bears game and they won. And it was like 8 horns, you know, and me on drums. You yeah. know, we all made $150 a piece.
That's pretty good for playing for change, right?
Right, $150 a piece, man. So, and you know, and there's a friend of mine, the drummer named Graham that lives up in Milwaukee. He said, man, I found this book that a photographer did, and it's got your picture in there. I had no idea nobody took a picture of me. I was playing at the White Sox Park, and it was with a saxophone player. And I look at it, and it's in a magazine. I got the magazine, me playing drums, and this saxophone player. I had no idea who this cat is, but it was 1990, you know. And I said, "Well, man, that's a little history there."
Yeah, that's very cool. how about some other guys you played with? I remember after you left the Kingsnakes, you went on with Sun Seals. End of his career, right?
Yeah, I played with Sun Seals. Went to Turkey with him in 1989 for a whole month. And then playing with Magic Slim, you know, I played with Magic Slim. And I played with Magic Slim for a while, you know, did that commercial with him. And after I left, I had heard of Big Twist and the Mellow Fellows.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, that band was a great horn band. I said, man, like, and I got offered. I did an audition with Big Twist and the Mellow Fellows. Because I was playing the amphitheater with James Cotton and the bass player, which has passed away, which was Larry's nephew, Big Twist's nephew.
Okay.
He had never seen a drummer play a shuffle like that because, you know, James Cotton played boogie blues and the shuffles are fast.
Yeah.
So he said, man, he was standing outside looking at me, man, like a cat playing that shovel, man, so fast. And so, like, somebody called me and said they needed a drummer, and they were auditioning drummers. So I auditioned, so they picked me, and that's how I got with Big Twist and the Mellow Fellows.
And how long did you work with those guys?
I worked with Big Twist 85 and 86 and traveled a lot of places with them. Never in, nothing overseas. It was all.
He was more traveling around the United States.
That was a great band, man. Like Twist Horn Band. I always liked playing horn because I played in drum corps. You know, they got all horns.
Yeah.
So that was my bag, playing with a horn band. And also I played 1978. I played with a disco band called Riff Raff, one of the top disco bands in Chicago. And they had horns too. They had 3 front singers who had tuxedos. Got pictures of that, and I also have audio of that show in 1978. So a lot of people think because you play blues that's the only music that you can play. I can play more than blues,
yeah.
You know. I played, I played disco bands, you know, like funk, you know.
I saw that you played with Charlie Musselwhite.
Charlie Musselwhite, yes, I played with Charlie Musselwhite. And actually, this guitar player that, I don't know if you know his name, Rich Kurtz. He played guitar with John Lee Hooker for a long time.
Yeah.
Now, Frank Brandy, I don't know if you
know
him.
Frank, yeah, bass player, producer.
Right.
Yeah.
Me and Frank and Rich, I used to play with them. We went to Sir Paul Serrano's studio, and we did 2 songs in there in the 70s. I forgot all about those songs. It was so long ago.
Uh-huh.
And then one day, Rich, I was playing down at this club. It was kind of like a Cajun club. I forget the name of it. It's called Redbone or something like that on State Street.
Oh, Redfish.
Right.
Yeah.
I was playing there, and then I saw Rich. He said, "Man, I got something for you." And he gave me the CD, and I listened to it. And it had put horns on it, put Charlie Musselwhite on it. And I said, "Man, I remember that song." So, but I played with Charlie Musselwhite way before that, you know, in Canada. I forgot how I got hooked up with that gig. I didn't play so many gigs sometimes.
Yeah.
I forget how I got hooked up. But playing with Charlie Musselwhite, he's not a great harmonica player.
He also plays some pretty good guitar.
I didn't know
that.
Yeah,
he's recorded records just playing guitar.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, you know, another cat that I play harmonica with is Walter Thornton. I think that's Walter Thornton.
Remember him? Oh, yeah, Big Walter Horton.
Walter Thornton, I played with him when I was playing with Otis Clay. We played in Utrecht, Holland, and played behind him. And also, when we played this place called The Rising Sun with Buddy Guy and Joe, I played with behind Big Mama Thornton.
Wow.
And another cat I sat in with is Dizzy Gillespie. Man, I was like, wow. Man, I'm playing behind Dizzy Gillespie. He came up and sat up with Buddy Guy and Junior Wells. You know, he came up, and I was like, Dizzy Gillespie.
I think the real question might be, who haven't you played with,
Yeah.
Right? Wow. Can you talk about working with Johnny Littlejohn?
John Littlejohn, man, that was another good traditional blues cat. I played with him, I think, the Mississippi Ballet Blues Fest, which was in the Quad Cities.
Mm-hmm.
We used to play with Aaron Burden and Larry Burden.
Right.
So, it was so far back in the days, but I used to do gigs with him. And I think later in the year, he got sick. Yeah, I think he had a kidney problem. And I went to see him in a hospital. I think it was at the Rush Presbyterian Hospital. And he told me, he said, "You're the only musician that came over here to see me." I said, "Man, you mean I'm the only cat that came to see you? You know, you're sick." But then later, you know, he had kidney problem. He passed away. And anytime your fellow musicians that you play with, I always pay my respects. Anybody pass away, man, I go there. If I can get there, I'm going. You got to pay your respects to musicians.
Well, I think even the live musicians, I mean, I know that you've worked with Alex Smith, young up-and-coming musician, and you kind of took him under your wing and helped him out. So, I mean, you're not just paying respect to the old folks, you're actually helping to nurture the younger folks.
Right. Alex and Michael Coleman took him out of his wing. Michael Coleman licks down.
Yeah.
Michael Coleman, and then he's a bass player, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he plays bass and guitar, you know, and plays those instruments very well, you know, as a young man, you know, and stuff. So it's been a lot of people. I've always been a person to try to help a person. A person asks me, "How do you do that?" You know, some drummers are self-taught, and which is nothing wrong with that. I mean, Buddy Rich was the fastest drummer in the world, but he couldn't read music, but people wrote his books and stuff out.
Yeah.
You know, and you got a lot of musicians that don't read music, but reading music helps a little bit. It helps you know, and it's an important part of music. It helps you understand music to be able to read, you know, a little bit. You know, it'd be excellent at it.
Right.
Yeah. You know.
I was looking at your bio, and also some other guys that aren't really on the blues radar as much as some of the other people, but could you talk about like McKinley Mitchell?
Yeah, that's McKinley Mitchell. Now, I got a picture. I don't know who took it. It was back in the 80s. I think it was in Harvey. And it's a picture. I got it on my Facebook page, me playing double bass drums with the late McKinley Mitchell.
Uh-huh.
He always liked the way he said, "You're a great drummer." He's a great singer.
Yeah, great singer.
Great singer, man. And I think he passed away, I think, in 89 or something like that. He passed away. I forgot, I played with so many people. And I'm glad you didn't even think about that until you just brought it up, man. I forgot I played with McKinley Mitchell, man. I used to do gigs with him, you know, and stuff. And then also, I like to mention my, I call them my Brazilian blues brothers.
Okay.
Now, when I played over in Brazil at a festival, this harmonica player, which is Ivan Marco, came up to me and said, man, I like the way you play them shuffles, man, you know. And then I met him, and then he got in contact with me, and he said, I'm coming to Chicago. And he said, could you get a band together for me? So I got Michael Coleman, I got Michael Morris on bass.
Right.
So we did a CD with him. And then he went back to Brazil and told the band he played with there, which is Jiba. And then they came back over with all the Brazilian guys, and they wanted to use me on drums. So we went to the Del Mar house and recorded a CD called Brazilian Blues Bash, which John McDonald is playing, singing one song on that CD.
Cool.
And that's a great blues CD, that CD, Brazilian Blues Bash. And they had me over in Brazil in 2013. This time I was the star. They flew me over there, and they treated me like a king over there. I sold a lot of my CDs, DVDs.
And that's kind of what you're talking about, is bringing the drummer up front, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a lot of pictures that people took, and I sang the Teeny Nina New, and then they had the audience coming up and the kids coming up singing the Teeny Nina New and dancing and stuff. And Brazilian people are very nice people, man. I was so honored. They wanted to take pictures with me. I took pictures and stuff. And then the first place that we played, every place we played, I did a drum solo. I had no idea that they was videotaping the first place that we played, that they taped my drum solo. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And then until Jeeba said, I got something for you after I got back to Chicago. And he sent me that video, and I started off with timpani mallets on the Zan. I was kind of like testing the drums out, you know, like how they sound and stuff, because I had no idea nobody was taping that drum solo. And then I'm still trying. It's on video, that drum solo. And another guy from, it's called Drum Talk, which is a website. He put that on his site. He puts drummers on his site. And he talked about unusual to see that a drummer starts off a drum solo with mallets, which nobody really does that.
Right.
You know, so I tried to do something different.
I think, too, that, like, Brazilian music, I think of stuff that's very very rhythmic and maybe drum-oriented, so I could see how they would respond to your drumming.
Yeah. And any place that I go, I always talk about drum corps. And they have some drum corps in Brazil. It's a guy that played in the Concord Blue Devils, which they were a very top-flight drum corps. He moved to Brazil, and he married a Brazilian girl, and he teaching those young drummers over there, drum corps over there. He's been over there since, I think, the 90s.
So still an important part in the fundamentals and rudiments of music.
It was a trumpet player that played on David Letterman. He also played in the Cadets. He played in drum corps. Steve Gadd played in drum corps. Billy Cobb Ham played in drum corps. Gray Bissonette played in drum corps. Cindy Blackman with married Carla Santana, she played in drum corps. You got a lot of great drummers out there, man, that played in drum corps.
You see a trend.
That's another thing I try to turn on to all the young cats, because you can learn a lot from drum corps.
Can we get back to the blues a little bit? A couple other names. How about your work with Jimmy Dawkins?
Yep. I worked with Jimmy Dawkins, man. I went on a tour with him in Boston. I think I didn't play with him a long period of time, but I just went on a tour with him, Jimmy Dawkins, that's another cat I forgot about. You bringing all these cats I forgot about. I played with them, man.
How about Ab Block?
Ab Block, that dog. I did an album with him.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think it's at Soto Studios.
Mm-hmm.
I'm playing on three songs, and my friend, which was a great drummer, Ike Davis. I don't know if you remember Ike Davis. Had a brother named Leo Davis.
Okay.
Ike was a phenomenal drummer. He's playing on three songs on that album, and I'm playing on three songs on that album. Also, I got an endorsement with Soul Tone Cymbals.
Okay.
Which got my name on that. And the person that turned me on to that is Stix Taylor, which is Charles Siller's son. Hooked me up with Soul Tone Cymbals.
I remember you talking to me about Joe Kelly.
Joe Kelly, that was my friend. I forget, man. Joe Kelly, man, that was a great guitar player, man.
Because he was also like part of what, The Shadows of Night, Gloria.
Right.
And had a hit with that. Yeah.
We used to do the Gloria when I played with Joe Kelly. He was my good friend, you know. He passed away from he played till the end, man. He got real skinny, and I played the last couple of gigs with him. He had bone cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to see him on that Thursday at the hospital, and he told me, he said, man, I did wrong too long.
Wow.
And then a few days after that, he passed away.
Well, yeah. You're talking about all these people that you've known who've passed. I mean, what do you want your legacy to be? What do you want people to say about you when you pass?
I always try to be any kind of instrument you play or music you play. Sometimes people try to influence you to do something else. You know, always do whatever your heart tells you to do, and try to be the best of what you can be at the instruments, whatever you play. Be your best at that. And then in this business, you got to be humble. You got to be on time. You know, and being humble in the business is very important, you know. And you got to be kind to everybody, you know, because we all doing the same thing. And I want people to remember me that I'm a person that try to help out other people. If they need my help, somebody ask me to do it, I do it. You show me how to do this, I'll sit down and take the time and show them how to do it. You know, and I try to tell them where they can get that from, where I got it from,
mm-hmm.
You know. So I want people to remember me like that. But I hope it'll be a long time.
Right. I mean, just we're kind of talking about that subject.
Man.
You know. Yeah, don't bury me yet. Right? You've traveled around the world numerous times. I mean, I can't imagine all the different countries you've been. Do you have certain highlights that stand out about different places or different gigs that you've done with different people in some of these places?
Well, you know, I can say I've been to every state in the United States except for Alaska, Arizona, and I think Hawaii is, a state.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been to those three places. And out of all the places that I ever played, the best place I liked playing was Canada. I love Canada. That country is like a melting pot. Everybody lives together there. It's not segregated or, you know, Puerto Ricans over here, Mexicans over here. Everybody live together.
Right.
That's what I like about Canada. You know, so if I was going to stay anywhere, I would move there.
Okay.
You know. And other countries that I've been, you know, when I went to Moscow, Russia, I kind of pictured it being, you know, because it was on the Iron Fist. I kind of pictured it being an old style being in the Iron Fist. But when I got there, I said, man, this is like being in Chicago. I mean, they got big cities and same thing going on in Chicago, going on in Moscow, Russia, you know.
Who were you in Russia with?
I played it with Eddie Clearwater,
uh-huh.
You know. And I got a chance a second time to go back to Turkey. I did it with Sun Seals, 89, in 1999, I did it with Eddie Clearwater, whole month, you know. So I've been to Turkey twice, and we travel all over Turkey.
Yeah.
Istanbul, every place, you know. And I also, female singers like Shirley Johnson, great female singer. I traveled with her in Spain, Zaragoza, Spain, Barcelona. Also been to Madrid, Spain with Lonnie Brooks. I got a picture, I think a picture of me out in front of a hotel on a bus. I've been to Sweden, Stockholm. I've been to Iceland. I forgot about Iceland, man. I've been to Iceland. I was in Iceland with James Cotton. I've been to a lot of different countries, man.
And what do you think about the international audiences versus like a Chicago audience?
You know, in all the countries I've been to, they kind of appreciate the blues over there more than they do in the United States. I mean, it's people who like it. Blues come from the South. You know, everybody know it comes from the South. But other countries seem to appreciate it more than they do here. You know, you got a lot of people, they just know about B.B. King or Johnny Taylor or, you know, people like that, you know, like they don't really listen to the kind of blues like, say, like Stevie Ray Vaughan or Lonnie Brooks. Cause I played with Lonnie Brooks in Oklahoma City, and it was an all Afro-American club. Wasn't that many people there?
Yeah.
That was the first time I ever played a place that was not a lot of people, you know, but it's certain kind of blues that Afro-Americans like, you know. But blues is big in Europe. That's why a lot of people go to Europe and play. And some people who are like, I don't know if you remember Boney Fields. He used to play on the streets with our horn player. Boney Fields moved to Paris, France. And, man, I played with Eddie over there, and they opened the show for us. He's got a great band over there at CDs, you know, like his wife, married a wife who plays tenor sax. And a horn band, they got a great sounding band over there. A lot of people moved out of the United States and moved to other countries because they get a better life, man, sometimes there.
Have you ever thought about moving to Europe?
I don't think I never really thought about moving anywhere. Like I said, if I had a choice to move, I think I'd move to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something Canada always had a hold on me. I think the first time I went to Canada was with Al Black. The first time I went to Canada, I fell in love with Canada, Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I've been from one end to the other end. And the one place I haven't been in Canada is Nova Scotia. Never been to that part of Canada. But I can say... I've seen a lot of parts of the world and playing the blues. The blues got me to all those places. Because, like I said, if you work a 9-to-5 job, you know, you don't get a chance when you vacation to go someplace. Now that you got a lot of money, you can go to those places.
What do you think about the future of the blues?
The future of the blues, you know, Chicago used to be a big blues place at one time in the 70s, and that write-up I got in Athens, Greece. I talk about the blues. Now, back in the 70s, at 8, man, I worked 7 days a week. There were so many places. You work on the west side, south side, not too much on the north side. I think the north side got kind of a little proper later.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it all changed when we had the gas shortage in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of places went out of business. And it just... all the blues scenes, the clubs are gone, man. You know, like, the only ones that's left is Roses, Buddy Guys, Case in Mind. And I think they got some, Coco Taylor had a club I played there. It was on Division. I played there. It used to be, I think she had another place on State Street.
And another place on the South Side, too.
Yeah. Right. And then Lee's Unleaded. That place was around a long time, and that place is folded up too, you know.
Well, I saw that you're a member of the Blues Hall of Fame. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, you know how I got into the Blues Hall of Fame? The guy that does that for Chicago musicians is Michael Packer from New York. Mm-hmm. If I hadn't went on the internet, I thought this photographer, Lynn, that used to take friend of Eddie Clearwater, I thought she had something to do because I seen her name on it. And I was sending her a message, and then Michael Packer came on and said, this site is not hers. And so I started talking to him and telling him about him myself. Mm-hmm. And when he started to, I started sending him stuff, he said, nobody never told me about you. And because he had a picture with Honey Bar Arrows, and I said, I got a picture with Honey Bar
right.
Arrows. And then when I started sending him stuff for me and he started looking into my background, he said, I done already made up the list for inducting people in the Hall of Fame. He said, can you do it next year? I said, yeah. But then when he started investigating my history, he sent me a message. He said, can you come down in October to the Blues? I said, you mean next year? He said, no, I mean this year. He said, I got your award for you. But my name wasn't on the ballot, you know. So I went down there, and I got my awards.
And how does it make you feel to be recognized for your history in the blues?
Man, it was a great feeling. He put me down as a master blues artist. And also had got an award a long time ago, 2004, from Charles Taylor in Canada, you know, as a real blues man.
Yeah.
You know, so I was very honored to get an award like that. But, it didn't really come from Chicago. I kind of like looking for something that comes from Chicago. You know, most of the write-ups and stuff I get are mostly from other countries or other cities, never here, and never in Chicago. I don't know why. But I didn't play with everybody.
Right.
You know.
They're talking about a blues museum now, going to be right off Michigan Avenue. I mean, maybe that'll change things. I'm not sure who's behind it. Sounds like some investors, you know.
I heard that a friend of mine said Buddy Guy's going to kind of be running that.
Did they have him on as, like, editorial or, you know, as an advisor? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and, I mean, I recorded an CD with Buddy Guy. It's on JSP label. It's called Breaking Out. Nick Charles, late Nick Charles, is playing bass on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Phil Guy is on there. Late Phil Guy. Doug McDonald's on there. Also, keyboard player is playing on there, which is Gene Pickett. He's playing on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was his first time that Buddy, that whole album is mostly, he used fuzz guitar on that whole album. You know. And I also have, when I was in Canada with my band, I did a radio interview there, which I got it on a cassette tape, and it talks about all the different, they played those songs and stuff on the radio. I had that on cassette tape from an interview from a radio station from Edmonton, Canada. You know, so, but I got all the copies, all that stuff, man.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
So out of all the people you've worked with and recorded with, I mean, who would you say are maybe some of your favorites, either on a personal level or on a musical level, you know?
Well, my favorite, I love playing with Albert King. Mm-hmm. I love playing with Lonnie Brooks. But I really love playing with Big Twist and the Mellifellas, and that's because I like horns, and then also like playing with the group called Riff Raff, which is a disco band. Mm-hmm. They had horns and three front singers. I like that. Those are kind of like my favorite bands. I play with, and I like playing with James Cotton. James Cotton was,
because that was a smoking band.
Man,
right?
That cat could really play the harmonica. You know, and also Charlie Musselwhite, man, that's another cat that played great harmonica players. You know, so I kind of have maybe 5, 6, 7, 8
right.
bands I like playing with.
Yeah.
You know, so.
So when you're not listening to the blues, or when you're sitting at home listening to records or cassettes or CDs, what's in your CD player right now?
Well, you know, I always like Buddy Rich. Buddy Rich was the fastest drummer in the world. I always like big band music. I want to play big band music because it's with horns, but that's not an easy music to play.
Right.
Big band music, you know. It used to be popular way back in the days, you know. You know, so, but I always wanted to play big band music, be a big band drummer. And another music that I love dearly, it's salsa Puerto Rican music.
Mm-hmm.
That music, man, the independence of the limbs and stuff, and that's natural for them because it's their music. Now, I had a drummer that played Cuban music, that played all them different rhythms and stuff. You know, he asked me, he said, I'll show you this here if you show me how to play a shuffle. And I was like, all that stuff, man, you play rhythm right. and stuff, man, and you can't play a shuffle?
Right.
Man, I couldn't believe that, man, that he told me that, man. He couldn't play a shuffle. But a shuffle has got a feeling. You know what I mean? People play a shuffle, but you got to have that feeling. That's
about feeling.
That's important in blues. You got to have, it's people that play blues, but maybe not have a feeling.
You could write out a shuffle, but you got to have that touch.
Right, you
got
to have a feeling.
Yeah.
You gotta have a feeling. And how I have a feeling of the shuffle is I kind of learned it from Dave Wicko when he talked about rhythms. If you can't sing it, you can't play it. So I listen to the bass player and I try to emulate that rhythm on the drums. Because basically the bass player and the drummer is actually playing the same kind of rhythm. And, you know, you got to smack that 2 and 4 there, and then even if the bass player or the amp goes out, the people can still hear that because I'm humming that shuffle, that bass line shuffle in my mind. So the melody is kind of still there. And drums are kind of like, I look at drums like, it's almost like talking to another person. When you talk to another person, you don't talk real fast, what do you kind of understand? You got to talk it. You got to play a drum so where people can understand it. You don't want to be the only one that's understanding it, you know, on the drums. So drums is kind of like, when I play a drum solo, I kind of like try to talk. And I learned that from old school, like Matt Troach, Joe Dukes, you know, Tony Williams. those old schools, those cats like do talking drums like a horn player or a guitar player.
Telling the story, communicating.
Right, tell a story. You know, and that's why I like to play a big set, because when you play a big set, you can hear all kinds of different melodies than playing a small set. I mean, I can play a small set too, but right. I prefer to play a big set. I go to drum clinics, and I ask questions of fusion jazz, like John Patitucci, or I go see the Erskine. I go to, and I ask those guys that in the business, and I ask them how do they perceive their music, and they tell you that we play off of each other. You know, you listen to that guy, you can play off of him, you can play off of them. And when I played with Michael Coleman, I played off of Michael Coleman, because Michael Coleman played those triplet rhythms.
Right.
And I used to play the rhythm on the hi-hat, between the hi-hat and the snare drum. I tried to emulate what he was playing on the guitar on the drums, but it was straight four on the foot, you know. And the most thing important in playing music is playing pocket. And you got a lot of drums that's trying to play everything under the sun on a drum set. It ain't about that, because if you go buy a CD or a record, they don't want to hear all that stuff. Man. And, you know, you present yourself when it's yourself
time
to shine.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why I say Kenny Smith he's a good pocket studio drummer. Also, Killer was a good pocket studio drummer. Very good, I've listened to cats in the pocket of what happened, man. If you ain't got that pocket, you know, that's the main, that's how people dance.
Yeah, they want to hear that beat.
Pocket, that's the more thing. You don't even have to know no technique, other technique on a drum set. That pocket, the bass drum and that backbeat on the snare drum is the most important. And the big band drummers, when they play drum solos, they play everything on the snare drum, because that snare drum is the main foundation of a drum set, and all those other toms are just icing on the cake, you know. But that's, you can play a gig with just a hi-hat, a snare drum, a bass drum. You don't need any other drums,
right.
You know.
That's true.
You know, so that's the main important part, is maybe to play that pocket, man, and playing time.
Okay, so you're going to the Philippines soon, and when you come back, what's in store in the future for Merle Perkins?
I work hard to try to promote myself as a drummer, because, you know, drums is always in the background, and you check a lot of drummers, man, start coming out front, like Casey Jones, quit playing drums, start singing up front, late Robert Covington.
Mm-hmm.
I've known him for decades, man, and then he stopped playing drums, started singing up front. Because I think they like the tension of being up front, and the drummer is always in the background.
Right. Sam Lay, another guy you talked about.
Yeah, okay. Sam Lay, man. I was glad he started playing like kind of Elmo guitar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my friend Pete that we're going to DK, he's a great drummer. Both of us played in drum corps, but he's playing guitar and singing now. You know, Killer did it.
Right.
You know, so, and then also Kenny did. Kenny is singing and playing harmonica, you know. And then also Big Eye Willie Smith played drums. And then a lot of people didn't probably even had an idea that he even sang or play harmonica.
Yeah.
You know, so. I don't want to do it. I ain't got too old. I'm going to stick with the drums.
Right. Is there anything else you'd like to say or you're thinking about?
Well, it's just an honor for me to be able to do a radio interview and kind of speak to the people out there. I mean, I love everybody in the music world, man. You know, hatred is not a good thing. To be, man, you gotta love everybody, you know, in the world. You know, God didn't bring people here to too much stuff going on in the world, so we gotta make this place a better world, man, today, you know, try to stick together and do our best, whatever we're trying to do in life, you know.
Amen.
You know, so.
Yeah. Well, my friend, what do you say we make some music?
Yeah, that's it. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. City, here I come. I'm going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come. They got some crazy little women there. I'm gonna get me one. I'm going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come. I'm going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come. They got some crazy little women there. I'm gonna get me one. I'm gonna be standing on the corner of 12th Street and Vine. I'm gonna be standing on the corner of 12th Street and Vine with my Kansas City baby and the Kansas City bottle of wine. Well, I might catch a train, I might catch a plane, but if I had to walk, I'm going just the same. I'm going to Kansas City, y'all. Kansas City, here I come. They got some crazy little women there. I'm gonna get me one. All right. Some crazy little women there. I'm gonna get me one.